Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Restaurant Innovator, a podcast from the editors of FSR Magazine. Each episode features insightful conversations with trailblazing restaurateurs who are leading the charge in creating new and memorable experiences, and offers listeners a behind-the-scenes look at what it takes to stay ahead of the curve in this ever-evolving industry. I'm your host and FSR editor, Callie Evergreen, joined by my colleague and co-host, Sam Danley, associate editor. With that, I'm excited to introduce you to today's special guest, Luke Fryer, a food and tech entrepreneur with 20 years of experience in ground-up concepts, operations, and growth development. Luke is the founder and CEO of Harry, an all-in-one human capital management platform for hospitality that partners with restaurants from Applebee's and Buffalo Wild Wings to Jersey Mike's, Dunkin', Let Us Entertain You. We'll get into it. Harry helps with hiring positions from servers to sous chefs and everyone in between, and engaging the workforce to ensure quality guest experiences. Luke, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you start us off by introducing yourself and sharing a little bit more about your journey as an entrepreneur?
Firstly, obviously, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and the audience spans our two most favorite customer groups, between QSR and full service. So to give you an idea, I started my journey back in 1999. I was lucky enough to have the first Burger King branded franchise in Australia, and opened that at Sydney Airport, and spent a few years building a small Burger King franchise there, very much, you know, owner-operator, and can still make a Whopper in apparently 31 seconds, though it may look a little scary. And from there, you know, evolved my skills a little bit and brought a business called Wagamama, which is a noodle bar concept quite well known in the UK, a few locations in the US, but brought that down under back in 2002. And we grew that to just on 17 locations around Australia. Which is a lot, believe it or not, for a big country, but not a huge population. And then moved over to New York in 2007, started a small restaurant group, and have really had experience between both limited service, full service operations. Did adventure into one upscale dining concept, which was a labor of love in many respects, but something I remember fondly. But started Harry in 2013, initially as a talent marketplace. Having moved over to New York, realized it was, you know, quite challenging trying to hire staff on Craigslist, which back then was the main show. And I was also 30 years old and single and Australian and had moved to New York. And it's fair to say I was, you know, potentially experimenting with sites like Match.com for other aspects of my life. And it occurred to me that you could take the opportunity, or you could take that concept of a two-sided marketplace and apply that to the challenge of hiring in restaurants. You know, what if we could come and build a great profile for our business, a beautiful profile for candidates, and more effectively match, you know, talent and jobs? We launched that business halfway through 2013 and actually had a big and busy and successful marketplace quite quickly. There was certainly a lot of market demand. We really grew up in New York and California, just given, you know, I had some network in both of those cities and knew lots of great operators. What we discovered quickly was that the challenge with hiring, so we were trying to make it easier to hire for restaurants to hire. The challenge wasn't actually connecting the jobs and the candidates. There's actually lots of jobs and there's lots of candidates. And it's a very high velocity market. The problem was when people went to apply for jobs, it took them far too long to fill out application forms on some older technology. There was a lot of friction for our frontline hiring managers to do things like coordinate interviews, and the process. It was really the process of hiring rather than the marketplace that actually created a lot of the challenges. So we pivoted from that marketplace model, and by 2016, we had launched our first software product, which was the beginnings of our, what is today our talent acquisition suite, which is one of the three things we do at Harry: talent acquisition, workforce management, talent development, ultimately helping our customers build their teams, manage their teams, grow, develop, and retain their talent.
And before I forget, what does HARE mean? Does it stand for something, or?
It's an acronym, impossibly sexy, I might add, before I let you know. It's Hospitality and Retail Resource Interface. When I was 5 years old, I was running around my father's electrical retail store. And so, dusting fridges and that kind of thing. So retail is very much in the blood as well. So it was also a great five-letter .com domain for not a crazy amount of money. So we had the idea, and it ended up being a pretty convenient name.
There you go.
That's perfect. And so I know you kind of already explained what solution you were looking to solve. I know, there was kind of fragmented systems, outdated tech that you were also looking to kind of innovate around. Can you tell us what it took to build HARE and kind of scale it up?
Yeah, it's a great question. We started as a talent acquisition suite. And I think firstly, it was approach was the most important ingredient. There's lots of technology companies. There's a lot of technology companies that tick the box doing things that we do. But just as in the restaurant world, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And it was very much about our focus and experience. We've been very lucky to have a team of people who, we've always had a great amount of experience from hospitality in our team. And so because we have been building HARE for one use case, I think that's a very important tenet of the strategy. It just means that we don't think of the restaurant world as a market for us to tap. It's our homeland, so to speak. And that allows us to really understand the very intricate differences between a limited service and full service environment, and to then fixate on the differences between QSR and fast casual and other limited service formats, and so on through full service scenarios. Because, these are very large industries employing tens of millions of people, and the nuances required to really, to really adapt to the needs of the market in a way that makes things truly effective, very, very important for us. I think the second thing is we wanted to make it easy for customers. Like, I was solving a problem from an operator's perspective of like having to work in so many different places. I mean, it drives you nuts, right? You're logging in and out. You can't remember how to log in and out. You're jumping from mobile to desktop to all too often paper. And so not only have you got this spaghetti workflow scenario, but you also have data all over the place, and you're forever trying to copy and paste things into Excel to figure out how your business is going. So from the very beginning, we wanted to not only be focused on restaurants, but bring everything into one place, which means when we were looking at a hiring solution, it's not just about applicant tracking. You've got to help your customers need to be able to brand, do all their recruitment branding. They need to be able to distribute jobs. They need to be able to do video interviews and onboard. You've got to bring everything into one place. And we've been very committed to that from day one. So people don't have to, our customers don't have to walk through that trade-off between best in class and all in one, because it just costs a lot of money and it wastes a lot of time. And, our industry can afford to do these things no longer, right? And then, as we evolve from talent acquisition into, other parts of the world, it's pretty, any operator will tell you that a dollar of retention is worth $10 of hiring. And our evolution was pretty simple. It's like, well, we can help people hire better, but actually at the end of the day, we need to fix this retention problem. I learned this firsthand at Burger King, people not showing up at 6 o'clock in the morning, me doing everything from setting up the broiler to, running on the front counter and serving. We had to get better. We have to get better at retention. And as we got to understand from a big data set what the genetic problem with retention is, we were able to sort of tee into a couple of key things. The first one is, okay, headline, we've got very high turnover. If we're talking limited service, maybe it's 130, 140%. Maybe if pre-pandemic, if you were lucky, it was 100%. The number's just always been too big. But when you slice it down, it's really, especially in the limited service scenario, the number of people who leave in the first 90 days is where we have this sort of deep underlying cancer that's both an economic cancer and an operational cancer. And that's, you know, that's where those numbers became very stark as we dealt with bigger and bigger groups and got to see bigger data sets. It's like, hang on, okay, we all know this is a problem, but hey, it's a really big problem because in some cases, 50, 60% of everyone who's hired is leaving in the first 90 days. And if we unpack that further, actually, a lot of them are leaving in the first 30 or 45 days. And that is just painfully expensive and disruptive for our businesses. So why are they leaving? We actually got on the phone and asked thousands of people who have left in that period, and it was because of their schedule. Now, they'd say they weren't happy with their manager, they weren't making enough money, but all 65% of people leaving in the first 90 days were giving reasons that tied back to the number of hours they're working, the pattern of hours, the predictability of those hours. And these are very human themes that in an old world would conflict with, I need to cut labor costs, that concept that doesn't really work anymore. We need a far more nuanced and intelligent approach to our, you know, the profitability of our labor. But that underlying issue with schedule happiness was the big gate, is the big problem to solve. And we saw that across a very large data set. So getting, you know, addressing the fundamental problem of better scheduling was our next step in the journey. And that journey was, well, it was again about solving the fragmentation first and foremost, because you had your schedule over here and you were clocking in the POS and someone was printing it and putting it on a wall. And then if you wanted to interact with the schedule, people are getting on the phone or sending text messages. And then you'd have these other concepts like, well, how do I communicate with my employees and how do I ask them questions? And some softer concepts like, how do I reward and recognize people and how do I, you know, try to manage and improve performance? If you put all of those concepts together, they were being done in six different, you know, pick a number, six different tools and a lot of paper. And in fact, a lot of the time they weren't being done at all. And we had an opportunity to sort of rethink this from the ground up, starting really in 2017 of, well, how would you want to do it? Well, you'd actually want the schedule and the time, you know, you'd want the schedule and the timekeeping environment just to be one clean system. And you'd rethink the traditional notion of clocking in from being a kind of audit cost control type function to not only that, but a window of opportunity to communicate and engage. Because one of the big frustrations with so many executives in large restaurant groups is that it is hard to reach the people who touch my customers. It's just fundamentally, no matter, you know, what, the first couple of weeks of the pandemic drew that into incredibly, you know, into clear focus, because we needed to communicate effectively and urgently to everybody and we couldn't put a sign on a notice board. And all of a sudden everyone realized, well, it doesn't actually, like, we don't have functional communication. We can get to our managers because they probably read email or we can call them, but the other 85% of the organization, we actually can't get to them. And it all sort of tied back to, how do we more effectively, can we combine these concepts of scheduling and timekeeping with actually getting the message through to frontline employees? And we've been on that journey for not just getting a message through, but listening at great scale. We've been on that journey for quite some time.
You know, I'm thinking about this dynamic you're describing, where you have this like fragmented employee technology ecosystem. Operators have all these different tools that don't talk to each other, that don't share data. And, you know, sometimes the restaurant industry gets this reputation for being like slow to adopt technology, but it kind of sounds like that may be less of the problem. And it may be more about finding that right solution that solves multiple challenges, that checks multiple different boxes. Do you think that the restaurant industry has been overlooked or underrepresented within the like HR employee technology world? Is that part of the picture here?
I passionately think that the technology world has failed to adapt to the realities of, there's two layers of reality, right? A, frontline workforces, and B, the needs of restaurants, because they're, again, they're different. You know, retail, despite our name, you know, the needs of retail and restaurants are different. And again, if we get into the world of restaurants, you need fundamentally different tools and methodologies to talk to people across the spectrum of our industry. Sorry, not to, just to speak with, but to really manage the whole cycle of employees, because different things matter to different people in our community, right? Like the tip-based part of our workforce have very different needs and drivers than people working in the limited service environment where tipping isn't as common. There are very different drivers there. Our front of house teams, our back of house teams, there are very different dynamics. What I think the tech world has failed to realize is that in order to get employees to do things you want them to do, some of the softer components, which are really important to building an enduring business, you actually need to thoughtfully weave them into the things they have to do. Because our managers are too busy to try and execute yet another initiative, you know, every 6 months or every year. You know, they're completely overloaded. The burden is on the technology to deliver the outcomes in a way that does not burden the operators. And a lot of people miss that fact. And it's very stark when you look at, you know, communication tools that employees don't have to look at. Guess what? They don't look at them. You know, they're looking at it 5 or 10% of the time. So you actually, and the reason it hasn't happened is because it's hard. It's actually really hard for a technology company to go and build the underlying infrastructure needed for people to do the work in a way that works for the restaurant industry, at the scale of the restaurant industry, and with all the things that are hitting us every day, right? Especially compliance, but also the nuances of our team members. You know, no, people aren't sitting at a desk. And sure, but not all of them have mobile devices. And by the way, not all of those mobile devices, actually work the way we expect them to. So you have to go the extra mile to actually reach and properly connect with those, with our frontline employees. And that is too hard. And I think somewhat unprofitable for a lot of tech companies who are trying to address challenges across all industries.
You know, kind of along those lines, I'm curious, I know that you work with, you know, both QSRs, limited service, and, you know, full service restaurants. What are some of the, you know, differences in the needs between those different service types? And then what are some of the opportunities they all have in common?
So I think I might start with the commonalities, because it's really interesting as I speak to, you know, we've got so many great high-end full service upscale partners, you know, many great chefs the teams of many great chefs use our platform every day, but as well as many of the large limited service QSR groups. Everyone cares about core concepts, you know, optimally deploying people, the optimal deployment of labor, getting a schedule right. Because at the end of the day, you've got to have the right people, the right place, the right time in a sufficient number to meet demand. Now, whether that demand's going through a drive-through or, you know, walking down the line, you know, walking down an assembly line, or, you know, sitting in a white tablecloth restaurant, you've got to get that right. And that today, with the cost of labor, all the rules we have around how we schedule people, plus very much an empowered workforce who want to, you know, work in particular ways that suit their lives, people expect work to fit into their lives rather than their lives fitting around work. It's a fundamental difference. That need for the optimal deployment of labor exists in a very sophisticated way in both environments today. Secondly, you know, using that deployment to maximize throughput. And it's fascinating to go and watch the founder, the Ray Kroc story. And I watched that movie the other day, and what fascinated him about the original McDonald's was throughput, their ability. They called it the speedy service system. And that was, you know, the core of that incredible business has been, you know, this fantastic approach, this very sophisticated approach to throughput. And that is common to both limited service and full service. It's maximizing how we get, you know, maximizing throughput. Especially today, where the difference between profit and loss is really the last 10 or 15% of people you get through the door. Then I think thirdly, the need for a holistic approach to an employee experience, but tying that directly back to retention. And in the limited service environment, what we see is, you know, look, especially where you don't have a tipped wage, consistency of hours and flexibility are absolutely key, right? People are often, you know, are often working in roles where there's something else in their lives that they're working around, you know, be it school, potentially another job, it could be a hobby, it could be family, but the ability to flex is incredibly important. In the, you know, I'd say certainly in the upper end of the full service environment, that type of flexibility isn't as important. Sorry, it's important, but it's not as fundamental as it is in limited service. You'll find there that the, you know, people's ability to be fairly scheduled, right, an equitable distribution of shifts through different kinds of day parts, and people to be able to advance through different days or times of the week that give them the opportunity to earn. That is, you know, quite important there. So we see that the underlying fundamentals of deploying employees the right way, focusing on all aspects of the employee equation and retention, those themes are common. What we're seeing today, as opposed to a year and a half, 2 years ago. Back then, in the, call it the peak of the post-COVID era, it was, we just need to get staffed. Like, get me anyone. I need a pulse rate. I need someone on the line or at the window or whatever it may be. And today, the best operators in the market are taking a step back. The absolute dearth of talent there's more liquidity, there's more talent available. It's certainly not back to exactly where it needs to be, but it's out of crisis mode. And what you're now seeing is the best players in the market are taking a very strategic approach to retention. And that is, no one can afford just to continue to pay more money. It has to be more deliberate. And you know, some people say it's not just about the money. A lot of the time it is. But again, back to that concept of predictability. And now, as people are really starting to think about the career pathing opportunity, as we get out of the craziness, employees are returning to the industry, our ability to provide that view of career pathing, whatever part of the market we're in, absolutely essential. And that is, there is a deliberateness and thoughtfulness going into that that we haven't seen before now. Essentially programmatic growth opportunities.
What role does data play in improving and bolstering the employee? Can you talk a little bit about how data factors into your platform and how organizations can leverage those insights to make better decisions? What might that look like?
So again, I think the big problem to solve, and there's so many amazing ways our industry can use data. There is just so much of it. We're in a very lucky position because we bring in our clients' transactional data, so we have a view of what their customers are doing, and we have all the employee data in our system, and we're increasingly bringing in other data sets. For example, we're starting to bring in customer sentiment as well. And the beauty of this perspective is that you can start to really see the correlation between employee experience and guest experience, employee performance and overall business performance. But getting, you know, if we could solve one problem, and that one problem's retention, and that's going to stabilize our delivery of brand, of service, of product, right? So that retention has these incredibly powerful effects in and makes businesses healthy. If that's the one problem to solve, it turns out it's probably deliciously simple to use data to really get ahead of retention. You're not going to solve retention, right? There is a whole soup of geopolitical, socioeconomic issues that go into the turnover drivers of our industry, but we can take it from acutely painful to something less than that. I'm saying there's no silver bullet. And it stems down to, it boils down to how are employees behaving and what are they telling you? So to put it in data parlance, it's, implicit and explicit data. Because any good operator can go and sit down with an employee, have a very frank conversation and figure out with a relatively high degree of certainty if that person's going to be there in, 4 weeks or 4 months. Are you enjoying the job? Are you getting enough hours? Have you got a degree of work-life balance? Where do you see yourself a year from now with us? These are really human questions. They're simple questions. And shockingly, our predominantly 18 to 32-year-old constituency, they're going to tell you. It just so happens that they'll probably tell you in a chat more than they'll a digital chat more than they'll tell you sitting down having a conversation.
Yeah.
Given that that's their native form of communication today. Now, what that means is we need to be able to engage with employees, ask them the simple questions and the more complex in a way that's, I hate to use this word programmatic because it sounds very dry, but it's consistent. And again, we can't rely on our managers to do it. By the way, at the end of your first day, did you have a good day? Ask the same thing at the end of the second day, end of the first week. Are you happy with your schedule? How do you get employees to give you the answers to the simple questions? And how do you track that? Think about all the energy our industry's put into tracking and getting very good at tracking guest sentiment, right? We've got so many tools. Well, actually, employee satisfaction is a leading indicator for guest satisfaction. So let's get good at that. And that is something that is probably the most exciting part of our, world at the moment is as we bring what we call Harry Engage to market. Now that's what our employees are telling us. That's the explicit data, but then there's implicit data, which is how they're behaving. And that is if you've got an employee who's showing up to work on time every day for the last 6 months and all of a sudden they start coming to work late or potentially not showing up at all, there's probably something wrong. Right? If they've had X number of hours scheduled for, the last 6 months and those hours have been cut by 50%, maybe there's nothing wrong. They could have just started a new course or something like that. Or maybe a new manager came in who just they didn't gel with and they changed their hours. Thinking back to my comment, when we go into these exit interviews, I didn't like my manager, is usually my manager is doing something with my schedule I don't like. So look at a change in behavior. Certainly in limited service, time and attendance behaviors are incredibly telling. Maybe for the individual employee, certainly, but looking at patterns across a larger state of restaurants, you can start to see real issues, managerial issues when you see those time and attendance trends. We're also within time and attendance, it's not just people coming to work late. You're looking for, it's the opportunity to detect nefarious behavior. People clocking out hours and hours after a restaurant's been closed. We use biometric technology, facial recognition, for people to clock in. And if people try and muck around with that, it's an easy way to detect. There's things we do that make it easy to detect ghost employees, for example. And so unfortunately, there still exists, wage fraud or otherwise known as time theft. Detecting those kind of things can be very useful as well. So how are employees behaving? It also ties into our productivity, our throughput. In the full service scenario, it's quite fascinating. Obviously, tips are an implicit an implicit satisfaction metric. We can pull that from the POS, and you can get this beautiful three-dimensional view of full service employee performance between average check, throughput of customers, tip percentage. But then there's this holy grail of what if we can actually get the explicit ESAT or an explicit guest comment. And that's something we've recently started to be able to achieve and bring that back to this sort of surround sound view of the full service employees' performance. So it's different views of performance, but looking at both implicit and explicit data in each circumstance gives a really revealing picture.
Can you share some of the success stories of restaurants that have experienced, you know, significant improvements in, you know, employee engagement, retention rates after implementing Harry's platform?
Sure. I think there's when we go to, firstly, if we start on the limited service side, we have recently begun to deploy. This particular company's this particular data point's confidential, but the data point's not confidential. The company is, but it's a very large quick service group, very, very large. We've gone in and been able to detect short cycle turnover and reduce that by 21%. So this is the number of employees leaving within 90 days, taking that from 54% closer to 45%. And that was quite profound.
Can you tell us about some of the work you've done to support Jose Andres restaurants as well?
Yeah, we were lucky enough for the Think Food Group, which is Jose Andres' company, to be, they're actually one of our very first software customers back in 2016. And obviously there you've got, firstly, a really rich, almost a rich tapestry of concepts, because they sort of, between Beefsteak and Haleo and all their other great brands, you have different types of, you know, different types of employees across that spectrum of restaurants. So we were able to firstly, you know, work with them to develop certainly the talent acquisition side of our platform. And then in 2019 and 2020, we brought them on for workforce management. And so I think one of the key things is they've been able to, you know, they've been a very much a lead customer for us in the development of the overall Harry platform. And, you know, along the way, we've navigated with them as they've moved into markets like Chicago and New York, a lot of compliance complexities. We've also been able to integrate tip distribution into, you know, seamlessly into the flow of work there, and also been able to leverage a lot of communication. So, and obviously working with Jose Andres, there's a lot of great information to share internally. So being able to help them distribute that to their teams has been exciting to watch.
Hmm. And I know that you have, you know, a presence in multiple countries. I'm curious how you kind of adapt your platform to meet the specific needs and regulations of different hospitality markets.
So it's a great question. I obviously, you can probably tell from my accent that I'm from the very southern part of Louisiana, but my home country is probably one of the most complex and over-regulated. It's a beautiful place to live, very difficult place to run a restaurant business. So if you've operated in Australia, you can you would like to think you've seen it all. Australia makes California and regulation, California and its regulations look probably more like Texas, to be fair. The point is, once you have adapted to the regulatory framework of the US and the kind of interconnected or disconnected complexity between federal, state, and local rules, it has allowed us to create a framework that is able to move into other countries. So as we, you know, work through the UK and some of the more complex European markets, which you think would have really complex regulations versus the US, we've pretty much seen it all. I think the themes are consistent across the regulatory landscape. There are some consistently emerging themes around, you know, how businesses must interact with employees. A lot of that is around breaks. A lot of that is around how schedules can be published and how schedules can and cannot be changed. And those rules are often well-intended, but universally they're horrendously executed, meaning that the authorities that are actually implementing the rules and enforcing them, by the time they actually turn up as regulations that our operators have to follow day to day, they're almost impossible to follow. We have, you know, we're now deployed in 27 countries. We're rolling out in about half our customer base is in the UK, but we're rolling out in, you know, Dubai, the Philippines, a couple of European markets. And we've been able to, it really sort of comes down to the way we build the technology. Because it's a very modern platform, we can adapt the rules that we build in the US pretty easily for those other markets.
So looking ahead here, what developments or enhancements can we expect from Harry's platform in the future? How are you guys going to continue evolving to meet the needs of your customers?
I try and work with my team on this analogy constantly. It's a little bit like driving a car down the highway. Traditionally, our industry, our customers are used to looking in the rear vision mirror. Tell me what happened. Show me a report to tell me what happened. In the case of compliance, oh gosh, something's gone wrong. Tell me what happened. Tell me what went wrong. The first thing we've got to do is bring this into a dashboard. I've got to see what's happening in the now. And that is really a combination of how are my employees performing and behaving? How's that interacting with my revenue? And what are my customers experiencing? Bringing that into a live view. Now, these data points exist, but they often exist in different places that are hard to reach. Bringing that into a single pane of glass and making it as delightful as a Tesla's dashboard, so to speak, we're there right now. But of course, the smartest cars today will anticipate what's going to happen. They'll tell you a car's moved into the lane or someone's braked suddenly, and they're going to help you. They're going to help prevent you making a mistake. And that is, you know, at a very headline level, that's where we're heading, because I'm convinced that between a combination of all the customer data, all the employee data, listening to your employees, you can get this incredible sense of your business's health now and in the near future. I'm going to be able to tell you what's going to happen 2 or 3 years from now, but certainly a 3 to 6 month view is there to be had within a lot of the information that sits in our businesses today. So bringing the insights and the analytics, and the most overused word of the last 4 months, AI. But what's AI, right? It's artificial intelligence. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be actionable insights that are actually impactful. That's the AI we care about here. Is don't say something's AI unless it's going to have a meaningful outcome. So when we talk about listening properly to our employees, yeah, you can actually use AI, or actually machine learning, which I recently realized was a sub-discipline of AI, right? So machine learning. So as it goes, you can actually use machine learning to start to, across a really big set of numbers, look for patterns that can help you understand how your employees may be looking to behave, whether they're going to go or whether they're going to grow, right? That's an example. We can bring a lot of performance improvements to our business by better understanding what our flow of customers is going to look like. That's demand forecasting. It's not sales forecasting. I used to think it was sales forecasting. No, you're predicting a pattern of customers, and they will spend X amount of money, different amounts of money at different day parts and at different times of the year, and that will give you your revenue. But predicting that, better predicting that flow of customers is incredibly important, and you can apply true AI there today. You know, a lot of 26 markets in this country we call compliance markets, and operators face significant risk there if they don't get compliance right, from fines or lawsuits. And what we're really talking about from a predictive capability is helping operators understand where behaviors of employees or things that aren't being done may cause them significant legal issues in the future. So that concept of predictive compliance also can take a lot of weight off operators' shoulders. So it's all about how we use automation to give time back to frontline operators, to help above store operators get a clearer picture of what's happening now and going to happen in the future, and how we can start to get increasingly sophisticated in our approach to this sort of multidimensional view of employee experience to drive retention.
Fascinating stuff. And I also love the metaphors you have used throughout this conversation. So you've basically gone from the, you know, Match.com to the Tesla for restaurant hospitality, right? Well, fortunately, we are coming short on time here, but if any of our listeners want to learn more about Harry or, you know, reach out to you, what's the best way they can do so?
I am very reachable at luke@harry.com. And of course, our website, harry.com, has all different kinds of ways to get in contact with us, including a delightful chatbot.
There we go.
So you'll learn everything there.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Luke. And thank you to all of our listeners out there. Stay tuned for more.
Thank you very much.